Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The emotional debate about reopening schools during the COVID-19 pandemic has quieted little since the beginning of the new school year. Fairfax County schools, for example, canceled the return of students to class just yesterday. And tomorrow in D.C., the CARE classrooms will open in the elementary schools. Just over 400 students have signed up for the 600 available slots where students will socially distance in class for virtual learning. An adult monitor will be there, but teachers will teach remotely. Well, tonight, we're going to talk to Elizabeth Davis, president of the Washington Teachers Union, about teaching during the pandemic and where she thinks things will go from here. If you're a teacher or a parent from any school district, just not D.C., join the conversation. I want to hear from you. What do you think about the direction that we're heading in reference to educating children in the midst of this pandemic? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. By the way, we did try to get a representative from the Fairfax Education Association, but they were not available. President Davis, thanks for joining the conversation. How are you?
I'm fine, Harold, and thank you for inviting me on your show.
Absolutely. I want to talk to you about, first of all, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow?
I am not sure, but one thing I do know, Harold, is that our teachers and other school-based employees, the nurses, the custodians, are all looking forward to the day our schools can reopen to in-person learning. But we believe that our city must continue to make the health and safety of our students and school-based employees its top priority as we return. So tomorrow in the CARES classroom, we are not really clear on what we can expect. I do know that teachers will be teaching virtually from homes for term two, and that individuals who will monitor students in the in-person classrooms at 29 sites will be other individuals. I'm not clear on who these individuals are. I understand that some of them are partners, some of them are school-based employees. But one of the things that we have pointed out to the chancellor in D.C. Public Schools is that transparency is the key to building confidence in whether or not the safe reopening of our school system is going to satisfy parents and other school workers. So tomorrow, we're basically waiting to get feedback from how the first day goes. We are not really enthusiastic about whether or not all of our schools are ready in terms of safety protocols that should have been instituted in each school. We have instituted walkthrough teams at each school, the 29 schools that are slated to be reopened. But the reports that we're getting is a bit disturbing. Some of them have not met the metrics on the safety checklist that we developed for DCPS, and we're concerned about that. But we're going to get a report from the teachers, from the principals, from the custodians, because we're all working together. These five unions are meeting daily to talk about joining our efforts to have a collective voice and what we expect in the way of safety for all school workers, not just teachers, but all of the individuals that will set foot in these schools, including our students.
But, you know, suffice it to say, DCPS and the teachers union did come to an agreement that is going to allow CARES to move forward. That was a tough slog. I'm sure that's fair to say for both sides, particularly when you're both trying to get to the same place of educating public school students in the district. Talk to me about, you know, some of the conversations as you two crept closer and closer to an agreement.
Well, the first thing I want to correct you on, Harold, is that we have not reached an agreement. The agreement is tentative. Until both the chancellor and I sign off on that agreement, it is not an agreement. It's tentative. As okay. in contract negotiations, every proposal is tentative until both parties agree to sign off. We have not done that as of yet because there are still some sticking points that are of concern to me. I thought it was necessary to share the memorandum of agreement with our members because our members are the ones who are would be basically put at risk if our schools are not ready. And I wanted to get their way in. I think that's just the best way that every union should go. It's not up to me as president of this organization to make a decision on behalf of 5,000 members. So we basically sent the MOA out to our members last Friday. We are reviewing all of the data, all of the questions and concerns that were raised by our members regarding terms 3 and 4. And we are going to review that before we have further discussions with Chancellor Furby. But at this time, just to be clear and on the record, there is no agreement until both parties have signed off on the memorandum of agreement, and we have not done so at this time. I do have a call with the chancellor later this evening, and tomorrow our contract team will meet at 8 a.m. in the morning to talk about all of the data that we collected from our survey from our members as of last week.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Elizabeth Davis, the president of the Washington Teachers Union, about educating children in the midst of the pandemic, specifically in the D.C. public school system. But if you are a parent or a teacher in any district and you have some thoughts about educating your students or your children, we would like to hear from you. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to also ask you, you know, from your perspective, what is, you know, the biggest concern? I know a week or so ago, there was a protest in downtown D.C. It was a really muscular protest. A lot of teachers from all across the district had various and sundry concerns. What is the number one concern?
The number one concern, Harold, is safety. And as you know, we have had a lot of talk about the vaccine. I don't know if this vaccine is going to be ready by the time we begin term 3 in February. We're in the height of winter where we have high community spread. The numbers of cases are ticking up in the district as they are across the nation. So we need to think about that and be prepared for that. One of the things our memorandum of agreement ensures is that DCPS will follow CDC and DC Health and OSCE guidelines around safety. But because there is such an atmosphere of distrust in this school district, and it has been for over 12 years, we cannot rely simply on the word of the mayor or the chancellor in saying, oh, the schools are ready, the schools are safe. We're going to rely on feedback from parents who are part of the walkthrough team for their schools and the teachers and other school workers. So there are a number of issues that comes into play when we talk about whether or not the schools are ready for students. And I'm not going to deviate from the fact the union, WTU, is not an obstructionist to getting students back to in-person teaching. One of the things that we want to ensure is that when students are back, whether they are in small classrooms or not, we want them to be safe. We want to ensure that the plan is going to be transparent, that it is going to engage the voices of all constituents, parents, teachers, and other stakeholders in how it will be done. And at this point, that has not happened, Harold. And we're looking forward to DCPS opening up this conversation, this dialogue, and also including the constituents, the parents, and the teachers, and other school workers in the conversations about how this can be done in a way that's going to be safe for all children and their families. Because if you really think about it, this will impact the D.C. community if the plan for reopening schools is not a safe plan, because we're talking about community spread that would happen as a result of not having the appropriate PPE, the safety protocols that need to be instituted in every school. If that's not happening, then we are in trouble. And we need to have, and we must include all constituents, nurses, the custodians, the cafeteria workers, the teachers, the paraprofessionals, the principals, the parents, all of them need to be included in the plan for how these schools are going to reopen. And if they're not included, those constituents are not going to trust the process.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Teresa Dudley, who is the president of the Prince George's Education Association, is on the line. Teresa, thanks for joining the conversation. What's on your mind?
One is the phone bank.
Teresa, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Harold.
Yeah,
how are
yes,
you?
I'm doing just fine. Turn down your radio, please.
I just did.
Okay, go right ahead.
I just wanted to call in and give my support of PGCEA to our sisters and brothers in D.C. It is a travesty, in our opinion, that they have to fight so hard for a safety checklist, which it just doesn't make sense to us. And, we're very fortunate in Prince George's County. Our CEO made the decision to close the schools until February, and she's holding strong on that. She's catching a lot of sand from the state about it. However, it gave us the consistency that our families need, that our children need, that our educators need, so that we know for at least until February, you know, everybody's going to be safe and the students are going to be learning consistently. To keep sort of jangling around people and when people don't understand how serious COVID is. We've had several of our members pass away from COVID. So the educators in D.C. are absolutely within their rights to stand their ground and say, hey, wait a minute. You have to make sure that we're safe. You have to make sure that the guidelines are followed. We have the obligation to demand safe working conditions, not only for our members, but also for our children, because a lot of the children have compromised immune systems. So, Liz, I wanted to call. I heard you were going to be on tonight, and I want you and your teachers in D.C. to know that PGCA stands behind you 100%. And we want you to know that we want all of the Washington metropolitan area to be safe, not just Prince George's County, because many of your educators live in Prince George's County and many of our
Absolutely.
Educators live in D.C. So we all in this together. It's American Education Week. We're all in this together.
Absolutely. Thank you, Teresa.
Teresa, do you mind if can you hang on for a few minutes? Because there is something I would like to ask you about that. But just hang on just for a little bit. I do want to take another phone call, however. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Albert calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Albert, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here. I can hear you.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead. Go right ahead, Albert.
Well,
what's on your mind?
There are a few things that are on my mind. I'm here. I can hear you. Hi, there are a few things on my mind, but something that excites me is that this is an opportunity for education to change. Like, at least over the course of the last 100 years, education hasn't really changed in practice. It's changed on paper. It's changed in grant proposals. It's changed in public forums where people have discussed blended learning and all of that. But we saw when COVID hit that we weren't as blended learning as we thought we were. Like, we weren't practicing the technological side of blended learning. So it's exciting to see that educators are being creative right now, and it's my hope that they'll continue the creativity post-COVID.
Okay, Albert, thank you so much. Elizabeth, what do you think about what Albert was just sharing with us?
And Albert is absolutely right. He's obviously an educator, whether he's a teacher or an administrator, but he's right. This is a good time for us to be able to adapt, and our teachers have done an amazing job in all jurisdictions around transitioning from in-person teaching to distance learning. We need to get better at it. We need to provide the professional development to our teachers in order to improve that, because we know that we're going to be in a position for having to offer distance learning to students. But the remainder of this school year and possibly into next school year, we know that distance learning is going to be a part of the platform. So we need to get better at doing that. In the meantime, as a representative of our union and talking to other union leaders of all of the unions representing school workers in D.C., we believe that transparency is key to building confidence in the safe reopening of our school system. We can't do it in silos. We can't do it behind closed doors. And while we acknowledge and appreciate D.C. Public Schools' commitment to investment in the safety of our school buildings, our members, our teachers, and the general public, the parents, have so many outstanding questions and concerns that have not been answered. Our teachers believe that it's critical for DCPS to schedule verification tours of any DCPS facility after all necessary work is completed. We want the parents to feel confident that their children are going to be safe when they return them to in-person teaching. And I am apathetic to parents who need to get their kids back into in-person teaching for the social and emotional support that they need. But we're requesting that DCPS publish to parents, be very transparent, verifying through these tours, highlighting any areas where a school is out of compliance, and recommend that DCPS schedule these additional tours to verify completion of any items that were out of compliance in terms of safety, the safety checklist. And it's our position that no school should reopen for in-person learning until that school and all school community members have been afforded the opportunity to know that the work has been completed in their schools to address issues around HVAC, windows that don't open, classrooms that do not have ventilation systems. We're requesting that DCPS create a public reporting mechanism to ensure that all school employees and families will have the ability to bring attention to those areas where a facility has fallen out of compliance with conditions needed to ensure the safety of our students and staff. And I cannot say enough, Harold, even though I am as an educator, and you know that I've taught in D.C. public schools for over four decades, I am not a spring chicken. I do know that at this time, all of our teachers who are dedicated, passionate educators, their number one concern is safety first. Will it be safe for my students to be in a setting of 12 or 15 students? Will it be safe for them at the entryway, the nurses' suite, the isolation rooms? Will appropriate PPE be afforded at each school?
We need Elizabeth, to know that. I need to take a real quick break, and I'll let you finish your point. Also, we're going to talk to Nakia on the other side of the break. Also, Teresa Dudley from the Prince George's Education Association. I have more questions for you. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next. This conversation continues on SiriusXM in a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking to Elizabeth Davis, president of the Washington Teachers Union, about teaching during the pandemic and where she thinks things will go from here. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Elizabeth, you can go ahead and finish your point, and I want to go back to the phone lines.
And Harold, I just want to say that our teachers are committed to the goal of having schools reopen safely for in-person learning. And when they do reopen, we want DCPS to prioritize the most vulnerable of our students of every age group and in every neighborhood. So we look forward to working with DC Public Schools to ensure that this is going to happen. We look forward to ensuring that parents are going to be engaged, as well as other constituents in the school community will be engaged in these conversations. Because our union is a solution-driven union. We are not obstructionists. We are educators, and we care about our children. And, of course, we do know that if our children are not safe, if our schools are not safe, if our school workers are not safe, that's the dead end.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Nakia calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon. I guess my concern is, as a parent of an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 5-year-old, if the teachers are afraid to come back in the building and teach, how is it okay for the kids to be able to come inside the building and feel safe?
And
Go ahead. Go ahead, Liz.
That's a good question. And I'm going to say, as a teacher myself, I do know that in many, and I have been assigned to 7 schools in D.C. throughout my career, in many cases, I had to report unsafe conditions in my school. I taught mostly in Ward 7 and 8 throughout my entire career as an educator in D.C. And in some of those schools, which were in deplorable conditions, they had not been modernized. Some of them did not have central air conditioning. They did not have windows that opened. They had mice, rodents. I mean, so I was a constant advocate for my school, which meant that I had to advocate for my students. I wanted my students to have access to every resource that every child should have access to: librarian, full-time service providers, counselors. And we should all be advocating for that. There, no child in D.C. or any school district should be denied access to opportunities to learn. Every child should have the same access. And at this time, during this period, our teachers are absolutely petrified about the notion, based on their experience as teachers in D.C. public schools, where procurement orders for repairs are slow to happen or never happen. They are suspect about a promise that the schools will be ready to receive students safely. So I perceive our teachers as being the caregivers, the frontline workers, the ones who are basically going to be able to report whether or not, because parents trust D.C. public schools. It's just inherent. My mother and father trusted the schools to do the right thing by us. But our teachers are the ones who are sort of reporters who let us know when a school is out of compliance, when a school is not safe for students. And I rely on data that we receive from our teachers more so than the data I receive from the mayor or the chancellor. Okay. I trust our teachers. Okay.
Nakia, thank you so much for your comment. Teresa, I did want to ask you, because, and I think you, to this at least portion of this discussion, as you mentioned, Prince George's County Schools, distance learning until early next year. Fairfax County just yesterday canceling plans for some semblance of opening. And then, of course, we have the CARES, the CARES situation in the district. So, these three jurisdictions right next to each other are looking at very, very different ways of operating. Just, from your perspective, there's no one size fits all, because the virus doesn't care whether you're in Fairfax, Prince George's, D.C., teacher, student, administration, what have you. Talk to me about what you're seeing just, in the past couple of days as each jurisdiction just continues to try to figure this thing out.
Harold, I just feel awful for the other jurisdictions. I feel as though people are being pushed by things they don't really understand. There are a lot of forces at play here. A lot of the people who have been protesting, wanting the schools to reopen, have been a lot of Trump supporters. And the concept that this virus is not that bad, because he was able to go right back after 3 days in Walter Reed, and I'm not sure what Molotov cocktail they gave him to kill the virus, but the average person doesn't have access to all of that right now. And whatever, and even if he was feeling better or well enough to operate, not everybody had that. And quite frankly, he went back and set the whole White House on fire. Everybody's got sick, even his chief of staff. So the reality is that COVID is real. We have had 3 educators already in Prince George's County that I know of that have directly passed away from COVID. two of them before the back in March, and then one just recently. So we don't take this lightly. Dr. Golson doesn't take this lightly, and I'm so proud of her for having the chutzpah, the tenacity to say, you know what, and our school board to say we're going to shut it down until February. What does that do? It gives everybody the chance to take a breath and deal with distance learning in a way that's not disruptive. And anybody who's a teacher knows that consistency is everything. It's great for kids when they consistently learn about what it is that they need to do every single day, that they're safe and secure in knowing that their teacher is at least going to be online every day so that they can learn. So it's much more than just a fear. It's real. And how we manage this as a Washington metropolitan area, it really smacks to we have compacts that the federal government sets up for water usage. There's a compact for water usage in the Washington metropolitan area so that everybody follows the same rules with regarding water. There are compacts on felons. So if you're convicted of, if you're on probation in DC, but you work in Maryland, what are the rules, right? What are the rules if you work in Virginia? And how do you transfer somebody who's on parole from D.C. to Maryland? But there's no compacts on public education. Mm-hmm. There's no agreement in the Washington metropolitan area what should happen with our students. Now, we're seeing this with COVID on what is going to be the agreement amongst the school systems because, as I said earlier on the broadcast, we have people that live in D.C., but their children go to school in they live in D.C., but they may work in Maryland or vice versa. So if my kids are in Prince George's County and they don't have to go to school, but I have to go to school in D.C. as a parent, it leaves me with the issue of who's going to take care of my kids or watch my kids or what daycare provider am I going to have when a lot of the daycare providers have closed.
Yeah, as I mentioned, this is it's extremely complex jurisdiction to jurisdiction, you know, with mm-hmm. a virus that recognizes none of that. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319. Oh, did we lose Remy from Herndon? Okay, sorry about that. Okay, Remy. Calling from Herndon, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I was talking on the idea of sending kids back to school in D.C. public schools.
Uh-huh.
I truly think it's irrational. It's crazy. Until elected officials feel comfortable enough standing inside of a hospital or standing inside of a mall without wearing a mask, I think it's crazy to ask all of our, you know, our government workers to go into the school systems and risk their health. Because we all know people that passed away from COVID. It's very serious. And it's already hard to find, you know, qualified, good educators. Nonetheless, janitorial staff, administration, payroll, everyone. So if you lose 20% of your staff for egregious reasons versus just, you know, planning it out and being safe, I would hate to lose a family member or aunt just because they want to keep up with the curriculum. If kids have to stay home and maybe repeat a year, anything is better than losing human life. Even the kids, who wants to lose children? It's just better to stay separated and be safe. It's not worth the risk. It's really simple. Keep everyone home until they have a dedicated and a good plan.
Remy, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So, Liz, we know where we've been since the shutdown in the spring, and there's been a lot of consideration. Obviously, these 10 months or so, but outside of the debate and the discussion with the school system, how can in-person learning work in the midst of the pandemic from your perspective?
And Harold, as Teresa has stated, there needs to be greater collaboration and coordination between jurisdictions, Maryland, Virginia, D.C. One jurisdiction will affect, the plans for one will affect the other. And returning safely to in-person teaching is a major concern for parents and teachers. But I cannot say enough, Harold, that if I had a child in a public school, whether it is in Maryland, Virginia, or D.C., the first thing, in spite of the lack of social and emotional engagement that my child has been denied of as a result of this pandemic, I am still going to make their safety, my number one priority. And we whatever plan we come up with, and that plan needs to engage all voices if it's going to work. If it's going to work, it needs to engage the voices of parents and teachers and other school workers. And I'm not going to deviate from this, Harold. The number one priority has got to be whether or not we will have students who will be infecting each other, infecting other school workers, taking it back to their families, and actually exacerbating community spread as a result of us having a premature plan for reopening. And, of course, you know, the D.C. plan, I have some serious issues about whether or not it is even providing equitable services to students. Students that the reason why we are returning students to in-person teaching is because those, especially special needs students, at-risk students, those students who live in homeless shelters, who've had the greatest amount of academic drop-off, we still want to ensure that the plan that we roll out is going to be equitable. And I'm not seeing that in the current plan. When we look at the number of students that are returning for in-person in D.C., we're talking 600. And we're talking about 27,000 elementary students in D.C. schools that will be in larger classrooms continuing in distance learning because the classes or the schools will not be able to accommodate those numbers. So we're talking upwards of some 40% of our students. And this in so many ways disrupts learning and the relationship for nearly all of our elementary school students. So we can't ignore equity issues around how we're going to reopen. The plan provides capacity for more than 200% of the students who are in wards 3 and 30% of the students in ward 8. Well, the largest percentage of at-risk students live in wards 7 and 8. So that plan obviously is not equitable. So we're hoping that DCPS, we're going to continue working with them, and we hope that they'll continue to work with us to refine their plans to ensure equity and opportunity for all students in every part of the city. Getting it right, ensuring that whatever plans, because right now, the idea of reopening schools a few days before the Thanksgiving holiday, in between the Thanksgiving holiday, we have the winter break where people are traveling, families are meeting and gathering indoors. And the spread is going to spike, as it has been doing in D.C. and other jurisdictions. We cannot ignore that. 60% of our members, as Teresa indicated, 60% of them live outside of the District of Columbia. At least 55% of them live in Prince George's County. So the plans that Prince George's County has for reopening, there must be some collaboration between PG and D.C. and whether or not they're going to reopen, because we will have a lot of parents who live outside of the district who will have children, school-age children, where they will be required to get family or some sort of babysitting services. That creates a lot of problems. So there needs to be greater collaboration between the jurisdictions. And, of course, I cannot ignore what is happening right now at this very moment around the increase, the ticking up of cases in D.C. and other jurisdictions, and the fact that we're expecting it to get worse before it gets better during the winter break, during the Thanksgiving holiday, and during the Christmas break.
Mm. Teresa, before I continue with Liz, I wanted to give you a chance to, you know, share a final thought before I let you go.
Listen, we, Liz is right on target with this. I feel like we've been together all day in different meetings, but you know, the concept of the inequities that our children are facing, you know, they say when America gets a cold, Black America gets the flu, people in poverty get the flu. We have the flu in our school system when we're dealing with children who don't have the resources. We still have children that have connectivity issues. We have been pushing with our Opportunity to Learn campaign to get Comcast and Verizon to up the broadband usage on their Internet Essentials programs, because if you have one kid in a house on a hotspot that is only giving you 25 megabytes, the other three children in the household, they can't get on and live stream. It's too much. So we have to look at the inequities with respect to the conditions that our kids are living in and our children are living in, and how do we mitigate that in this virtual world? I'll tell you, it's not fair. And I know that life is not fair. But when we have so many who are struggling, not only just to make sure that their children are on the Internet, but a lot of our parents have lost their jobs. Their restaurants are closed. Their businesses have suffered. So how we mitigate all of this as a community is going to be really telling. But I'll say this. I know for one thing, Howard, that the educators in D.C., Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Northern Virginia, everybody who's engaged in distance learning, we're all new teachers this year. We're all learning something we've never, ever done before. And guess what? These educators are rising to the occasion, and they are rock, shock, shocking it in the classroom. They're working from 7 o'clock in the morning till some work till 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And I know because I can see them on, because they take a break and they get on social media, or they're calling parents. It's a lot. And yeah. So it's American Education Week, and I just want everybody to thank your teachers, thank your administrators, thank your bus drivers if you get to see them sometime soon, thank the paraprofessionals that are working in your classrooms, the cafeteria staff in a lot of our jurisdictions that have been putting together food and having food distributions, the crossing guards from Prince George's County who have been working, doing the stand and deliver food distributions almost every day where the county is giving out food. They're being redirected. Everybody's working together. It's a pandemic. And yeah. We need to act like we love each other and move forward in a way and reopen the schools that we want to see in the future. That's my 5 cents, Harold.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, Teresa Mitchell Dudley, Prince George's County Education Association president. I appreciate your time. Liz, I want to go back to you. Something I saw today that kind of struck me, the Landon School up in Bethesda, a private school, but they have these outdoor classrooms, the kind of thing that you see when somebody has one of those backyard parties, and it occurred to me that even for a place like the prestigious Landon School that is doing something extra to keep children socially distant and the lot, that stuff is expensive, and I think the reality is that moving forward in the district, do you see that there's going to have to be a major shift in the amount of money that goes into schools? And certainly, you can't, to make schools better, you can't just throw money at them. It requires planning and a strategy. But just on the money piece, how is that going to change education, going forward, as long as this pandemic is here?
Harold, the only time I hear the term throwing money at the problem is when it's in reference to education. I don't ever hear it when it's in reference to stadiums or dog parks or any of that stuff. But I do believe that our schools, not only in D.C., but nationwide, have been, underfunded this for decades. In D.C. in particular, we have never, over the past two or three decades, kept up the cost of living for funding our schools. We maintain basically a status quo budget. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. I do want to thank Teresa for acknowledging the efforts of all school workers and the need to engage their voices in conversations around how schools should reopen. Because in about 5, maybe 7 minutes from now, I have a call with the labor leaders of the other 4 school unions representing school workers, nurses, paraprofessionals, custodians, cafeteria, and principals. And we're talking about how we need to work together to ensure that our schools are going to reopen safely. And as far as throwing money at the problem, if education is not a priority for every legislator in this country, because as you know, education in our schools is basically the gateway to liberation. Education is the last vestige for students, no matter where they come from, no matter what race they are, no matter what their class. So I don't think that we can ever overinvest in education. Mm-hmm. The teachers union has been negotiating for the last 3 months, just a building readiness checklist. It's something very basic. Is the school ready to receive students safely? Things that you would have in your home, central air conditioning, quality airflow, that you would assume would be available in every school, but it's not. So when we're talking about throwing money at the problem, we're mm-hmm. talking about providing students who attend schools at least one quarter of their day, 5 days a week, if it's worth investing in ensuring that those students are going to have the resources and their teachers are going to have the support they need in order to deliver quality instruction to all of our kids. But DCPS, and I'm not being harsh on DCPS. I'm going to continue working with D.C. Public Schools and Chancellor Furby, but DCPS has failed to be transparent and engage the constituents. And when I mean constituents, I mean parents, teachers, and other workers. During the school tours to see if the schools are ready, many outstanding work orders have not been met in the building. DCPS has not yet shared the detailed reports from contractors about whether or not the state of the HVAC systems in our school. This is something that parents need assurance is fixed and ready. And of course, we're going to have to do a better job at that. And I think if we work together, collaborate on how this should be done, that we can make it work. Getting back to in-person teaching, we can make that work if we are rational and logical and deal with the realities of where our schools are and not put any of our students or our staff members at risk. So I hope I answered your question, Harold. I tend to get off the track. I'm very passionate about education. I'm going to be a teacher for the rest of my life. It's just in my DNA.
When you have this phone meeting or virtual meeting in within the next 4 minutes or so, what will be your marching orders to your union colleagues?
Well, our members, they're dedicated to their profession. And of course, when they voted no confidence in the D.C. plan to reopen schools, citing disruption to students' learning and a lack of clarity and safety protocols, I have to hear that. Our members, our teachers, in my opinion, are the frontline workers in schools. They are the caretakers for students during that time that students are in the building. They are the experts, even though the school district, much like in many jurisdictions, have not regarded teachers as the experts on education and what works and what doesn't. They are. And I think one of the biggest failures that we've experienced is not acknowledging and recognizing that and utilizing our teachers as experts, the experts that they are. So I'm looking forward to a return to in-person teaching that is, number one, going to focus on equity. Number two, it's going to focus on safety for students, for staff, for teachers, and one that is going to engage all constituents, parents, not lock them out, not treat them as if they're outsiders, but but to treat them as if they are stakeholders and should be a part of the decision making.
Well, it looks like union, you know, colleagues that you'll be talking to in a few minutes, and indeed the D.C. public school system, certainly have your work cut out for you. And the pandemic has presented some challenges that I don't think any of us were really prepared for. And so it is going to require a different way of approaching teaching, learning, and, you know, managing of school systems short of a vaccine that works to just completely wipe it out. So I want to thank you, you know, so much for taking some time and talking to us. And we also want to thank Teresa Mitchell Dudley from the Prince George's County Education Association for calling in. And we are going to continue to watch this.
And Harold, I want to thank you and the Daily Drum for focusing and spotlighting these issues as you have consistently done, which is one of the reasons why the Daily Drum is an award-winning station. So thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth Davis, president of the Washington Teachers Union. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.